Anyway.
I'll call this meeting of the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. The quorum present here on Tuesday, April 9th. As we always mention at the beginning of our meetings, all hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. So our first item of business are the minutes for April 4th. Representative Olson, you want to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had an opportunity quick to take a look at the minutes, and I would move to approve them.
Okay. All those in favor of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Great. So today we have four bills on the agenda, and we want to keep presentations relatively short. The first bill is Representative Cagle's House File 4691. And Representative Cagle, you can explain the bill, and I think you have a DE2 amendment, and our motion here is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll move that House File 4691 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I'd like to move the DE2 amendment, if we could.
Okay, and what is the... involved in the DE2.
So the DE2, do you want me just to testify to the bill before we adopt, or the DE before we adopt this?
Yes.
Okay. So since the time of the opening of the St. Paul Union Depot, the only major reliable service going in and out of that station was the Empire Builder. Other seasonal or excursion trains also go in and out of the station, but only on a periodic basis. So now TCMC is slated to come into the Union Depot. And TCMC has much more of an impact on the Union Depot than the Empire Builder because trains will have to be stored overnight at the depot. The terminus for TCMC will be St. Paul. It will also double the people using the depot for rail purposes. Because of this enhanced impact on the depot, it was time to renegotiate the contract between Union Depot and Amtrak in order to ensure that Anoka County, the owner of the depot, could be kept whole. So in order to close the deal, Amtrak, Ramsey County needed a plan to deal with any large scale accidents for all the trains coming in and out of the depot. Well, Amtrak covers much of the insurance coverage. It doesn't cover all of the coverage for all of the rail services in the depot. Ramsey County said if there's a large scale accident between $50 million and $20 million for some of the rail lines coming into the station, they would likely need to rely on the state as they do not have resources to back up that cost. Rather than hope they don't have a large cost, they plan to buy insurance coverage. And they estimate that the cost of insurance is over $2 million per year, and remaining cost of the coverage is what is not covered by Amtrak. So this bill would have the state pay half of that cost in a cost-sharing arrangement with Ramsey County. Ramsey County was able to move closer to an agreement with Amtrak because efforts were made to close the gap in financing insurance. So getting this bill across the finish line allows all parties to feel secure that TCMC can move forward. And with that, I can turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Brian Isaacson, Ramsey County Public Works Director. Thank you, Representative, for your comments. Commissioner Ortega would love to have been here. Unfortunately, he's otherwise detained and sends his regrets. So I'll start by saying Ramsey County is an enthusiastic supporter of passenger rail service, as you are well aware from previous testimony from us. We have supported both through investment in the depot as well as other freight and passenger rail studies, significant resources in rail service. Union Depot is at the heart of that service. I'll frame the issue at hand as wanting to look long-term in terms of passenger rail and supporting that coming through the depot. The issue at hand is that in order to have other service beyond Amtrak, the county is put in a position of needing to indemnify Amtrak for any other providers that are approaching the depot. And so that framework leaves us with a $2.3 or so million dollar bill for insuring their operation from any other service provider. And so that's really the framework here. Since the introduction of this bill, we have reached an agreement, but there is that remaining long-term commitment at the county level for us to cover, and so this bill would then help defray the costs of that service. To just add one or two more details in terms of the county's commitment to the depot, that coverage right now extends over $50 million for indemnifying Amtrak. Operating costs alone for the depot are in excess of $8 million, so the county continues to spend significant resources in that. So hopefully I've clarified anything, and if there's any questions, I'm happy to entertain those.
Questions from the committee? Representative
Olson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have two questions going into this. The first one, the way this bill is designed, this one-time $1 million would absolve the state of any liability regarding this depot. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, member, this would defray the costs of the first year of that, of our costs for indemnifying him.
So then a question to the author of the bill, is your plan then to continue in perpetuity to provide this $1 million from the state's coffers in order to cover liability costs for this depot?
Mr. Chair, this is a one-time appropriation, and my hope is that in the meantime, Ramsey County and would be able to figure out a plan to for insuring themselves.
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, have we adopted the amendment? Are we moving on into discussion as a regard, or is this just to the testifier? Because I have one final question to you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Cagle, do you want to remove the DE2?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd move the DE2 amendment.
Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question to you. We have a $2 million budget target here, and this is a $1 million cost. Are we immediately going to cut in half the available funds for the other really noteworthy and valid and valuable conversations we've had this entire session?
To be determined.
All right. We would hate to see extra tax increases to fund these things, but at the same time, this is a one-time 50% explosion of our budget target.
Aware of that. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Then House File.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Do you have any further comments, Representative Cagle? And with that, we are laying over this House File 4691. Okay, next on our agenda is House File 4004. Is Representative Keeler here? All right, then we'll have Representative Nelson's bill.
And I'll move that House File 4372 be laid over.
Okay. To the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 4372 is a bill that was brought to me by Carvana, and currently it basically does two things. It moves two deadlines out, one for the registration from the auto dealers when they sell a new car, and the other is length of the time for the 60 days that temporary permits are allowed on the cars before the plates have to be put on. This is brought to me by Carvana is that part of what they do is their business model is they allow someone that purchased a car for them a 7-day period to keep the car or decide to turn it back and get a different car or no car at all. This gives them only 3 days on the current 10-day registration period to get that in, that registration in without getting fined. There's some sense to doing this, and there's a handout in your packet that shows the changes or the difference in different states, how they are, and we're kind of one of the outliers on the smaller length of time for allowing that to happen for both of these, both of those two permit cases. Interesting thing about the, what I looked at when I got the fiscal note that I thought was interesting was that they're saying there's an $800,000 cost to this because 400, because of the amount of fines that are given to the special revenue fund. 400,000 transactions are filed late at $2 a fine. That's the cost of $800,000. I find that an interesting way to fund government is to set short time limits and have fund us by collecting fines on people that don't get their paperwork in on time. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have a testifier here, and take it from there.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Natalia Madriga, and I'm here on behalf of my client, Carvana, in support of House File 4372. As the representative said, Carvana does offer a 7-day money-back guarantee, and so that means that customers can return the vehicle for any reason during that window. And so, yes, the current title application deadline of 10 days causes some challenges during that purchasing process. They often wait until after the 7th day of the money-back guarantee to begin the title transfer paperwork to avoid any work that the state may have already done should the customer choose to return the vehicle. So if a customer misses a place to sign or if there's a holiday weekend, that can result in late fees for the consumer and overnight shipment of documents. Carvana wants to provide the best consumer experience for their clients, and moving the title transfer deadline from 10 days to 30 days will improve that experience and alleviate the likelihood of the state having to reject documents for corrections and also put Minnesota more in line with our neighboring states and the rest of the country. So on that map, you'll see that North Dakota and Iowa are currently at 30 days. South Dakota is at 45 days, and we are beating Wisconsin, who is at 7 days. And I will do my best to answer any questions you have, but that's all I have today.
Thank you. Questions from the committee?
No questions, Mr. Chair. Just kind of a comment that I think that it's a great bill. It's a great opportunity for us to alleviate some of the burdens on business that we have in the state of Minnesota. So thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Nelson.
Okay. Questions, final comments, Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a common sense bill, and I renewed the motion to lay this over.
Okay. With that, House File 4004 is there.
4372.
Sorry, 4372. We're going to 4,000. That's what we were going to do, and we're waiting still for Representative Keeler on that. Okay. She'll be here in 5 minutes, and I'd rather not start the next bill. So why don't we just recess for 5 minutes and wait for a plus to do
it. Here. I script you do this. Well, this is fine. But there's solid chunks of metal. Oh, I love stripping metal. I don't bother, like, if it's plastic, buy a lot. Strip or paint over it, which is also sad. But metal models. Which is also bad. You don't want the paint to go on. But that, so all my metal models I put on there.
Yeah, I can look at the list. Did you hear that last week?
Yeah, a little sunshine.
But even a matte one has a little bit of a gloss to it. So one of my guys is shiny. Yeah, I got booted from. No, that's.
I got booted from Texas. Yeah, on the way in. I saw you that here. It has to go through another committee, they say, which I think they're right. I was just hoping they wouldn't notice. And they didn't notice for the last possible second. Oh, there's no way we can look. Smash it. So, I think we need to experience it in order to really understand it. But just 3 hours.
Side dish would be interesting.
How many times would you have to read it?
Raising money.
What about this quotation? Oh. Why is it all underlined? Because of the many rules.
But I think the majority of people in there are because of the horse.
I only like to read a bill two words at a time.
Which they didn't
come up with. By reducing the settlement? That is a real question. Oh, yeah, it is. You know, it is.
I don't know.
Right, yeah, why did they say it?
It was fucking crazy.
Our base would be there. Perfect president.
Yeah. Okay, we have our author here for House File 4004.
Hi, sorry.
That's okay. We recessed to wait for you, and you're here, and that's great. Representative Keeler, welcome to the Transportation Committee, and I'm going to move that House File 4004 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I understand you have an amendment, or?
That is correct. Thank you, Chair.
You want to catch your breath?
Sorry. I do have an amendment, and actually what this amendment does, it just changes the language. It's what they took in the Senate. It actually reduces the cost to zero. So that's what the change does. It doesn't change any of the intention. It was just something that they caught in the Senate to make it cost less. So would love if we could accept that.
The physical copies of the amendment are being distributed. It's a DE1, so we'll make sure everybody has that.
Yeah.
The language is just a repealer instead of the language that it is.
Okay. Well,
Mr. Chair, can the author of the amendment kind of tell us how we save $4,000 through this amendment as it's being distributed? I'd really appreciate knowing that.
Representative Keeler.
Because we're just putting it in as a repealer, so it ends the statute as it is rather than changing the statute, so it's no administrative cost. We're just ending it. Which was the Senate idea, which, you know, I don't want to give them too much credit sometimes, but we'll take it when they find us ways to save money. Also, I'll highlight that this is a Senate, Senator Rasmussen bill, so it is very bipartisan in our effort that came to us from our community college, and so I'm sure his fiscal soundness was able to help us find those dollar savings, too.
Okay. Do we have a copy of the amendment?
Yeah.
Being copied. Okay. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I wonder if Mr. Burris could explain why that seems kind of odd, just changing the language to do the same thing now doesn't cost $4,000. So could you explain why the original language does cost $4,000? Or is this just complete nonsense? Like, it's so strange. Love the bill, but I'm interesting question.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative West. So the bill as introduced directs the Department of Public Safety to go through a rulemaking procedure to strike some language in this administrative rule. And the effect of striking that language makes the remaining part of the administrative rule redundant with other rules that govern third-party the testing and requirements. So the switch to just repealing the administrative rule outright would then remove the rule. The department wouldn't have to go through the costs of the rulemaking process.
There's a West.
One meeting cost $4,000 or something, but yeah, interesting.
Why don't we just go to the testimony while we're waiting for the amendment?
Sure. Hi, can I do an overview of the bill
as
a whole
first?
Okay.
I guess we're...
I just want to talk about the bill. Okay. So the intention of the bill, whether you see it now or after it's revised, really came to me out after conversations with my president of M-State. So I represent District 4A, which is Moorhead. We have three higher education institutions there. And so we're always in conversations of how my community can address the workforce shortage. And so I'm sure many of you here, as often of us do, that CDL licensed drivers are extremely in high need right now. Like, there's hundreds of open positions on my side of the state, which I'm not sure what your communities look like, but I can imagine that we all look the same. And so what this does is it allows our M-State Community College to be the testing site rather than having to wait. Right now we have individuals that are completing the entire education rigor to become licensed, and then they're having to wait 6 to 8 weeks just to go to the testing site to test on their ability that they've been testing all throughout their academic path. And so what's happening is we have professors that are literally staying up until midnight. When the window opens, they log in and like plug all their students in for those testing spots. And so one, it would be a way to get our students on the roads and be able to help the workforce 6 to 8 weeks faster, but then also it would free up those other slots that maybe individuals who do just need to take the 180-hour credential test could then do that. And so it's our way of thinking that we're being efficient and getting a workforce development crisis addressed, utilizing some of our own resources. So with that, Chair and members, I will hand it over to our testifiers.
Okay, thank you for the overview. Mr. Essenson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jeremy Essenson. I'm with the Taft Law Firm, and I have the distinct pleasure of representing the trucking industry in Minnesota, and we are here today in support of Representative Keeler's bill and Senator Rasmussen's bill. Unfortunately, Mr. Houseladen wasn't here, so I'm a little less of a subject matter expert, but I do have some testimony from him, which I will largely summarize because Representative Keeler did a great job explaining the need, but I can put some specifics to it. Nationwide, at least 80,000 truck driving positions are currently open, and that, of course, means there are things not getting to where they need to go in the marketplace in a timely fashion. And there are a variety of other, let me back up, 3,700 in Minnesota is the most recent number we've got, open positions, and that tracks really well with what Representative Keeler was saying. A variety of factors cause that. We've got an aging workforce, the use of electronic logging devices, and a whole variety of things have taken that dream of driving over the road and made it a little less attractive to some folks. And we're doing all kinds of outreach to the veteran community, second career, all kinds of different creative things. But the biggest challenge we've got right now, and a special thanks to Representative Tabke for working on us on this, on another bill that, Mr. Chair, we're hoping we'll see in front of your committee sometime before the deadline, would do away with this 180-hour rule and make it easier, more efficient for folks who want to enter the industry to not have one more barrier. So, Mr. Chair, happy to answer any questions. Thank you for taking the time, and thank you, Representative Keeler.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Estes. Some questions from the committee.
We have, we do have one more testifier on.
Yes, I understand that Craig Baytien, did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes.
And I believe that Craig is testifying remotely.
Yeah. Can they hear us?
Yes, Craig, Mr. Baytien, you can proceed with your testimony. We see you. Can you hear us?
Thank you, and good morning. Pleasure to be here, Chairperson Bauman and members of the Transportation Committee. I'll make a very, very brief comment in support of the bill to eliminate the 180-hour training mandate. Under the current legislation, any post-secondary institution that seeks a third-party testing must adhere to that arbitrary 180 hours. It's noteworthy to mention that only four out of the 13 Minnesota State Colleges CDL programs currently have access to third-party testers due to the restrictive 180-hour stipulation. In calendar year 2023 alone, M State witnessed about 149 students successfully completing the CDL road training with an impressive 90% pass rate on their initial attempts. These outcomes certainly are, I think, are proof that we have the ability to deliver top-tier instruction, yielding really good results. Therefore, we fervently advocate for the elimination of the arbitrary 180-hour restriction, enabling us to expand our program and meet the escalating need for CDL drivers across our state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Murphy.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler. I like the bill. I'm just curious, there's a lot of the schools, districts that are looking at CDL training. Do you see this affecting that in any way? In terms of, you know, I know they're preparatory for this, but do you see any changes for them in where this bill is going?
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Clarifying question, are you talking like high school schools, like kind of those career academy type?
Yeah, CTE, yes.
Yeah, okay. I would love for them to blend together at some point. I think at this point in time, what this is doing is just the higher education component of it. In Moorhead, we have a amazing college and career readiness center, and so I know that I think age also makes a matter of a difference there, is right, like you have to be 18 or make sure that you're of age to be able to hold a CDL, but no, I think in the future there's better partnership, but at this stage is just for the higher education. I think anything that we can do to partner to get more drivers on the road quicker, I think we should explore for sure.
Sure. Yeah, I think really building interest is really the important part, and getting kids to start looking at that as an option. So I'm a 32-year CDL driver myself, and so it's just really important to get more kids to be active in that. So I don't want to take anything away from what they're doing. In fact, I'd like to build it too. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Any closing comments?
I think especially with the new price tag on it after changing the language, this is a way that we can really invest in our workforce, getting good workers out, working in Minnesota quicker, and then making sure that our economic system just works in a more functional way. And so I would appreciate your support.
That is the gist of the DE1 amendment. So we'll adopt that, and that will be the bill. Everyone has that now before you? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. And so now we have 4004 as amended before us, and the author has made closing comments. So we will be laying over 4004 as amended for possible inclusion in the transportation finance bill. Thank you very much, Representative Keeler.
Perfect. Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. And now we have House File 4988, Representative Kraft. Representative Kraft, I know you've been working hard on this committee, in this committee on this bill, and I know you have an A5 amendment. So why don't we start with that? But this bill will also be laid over for possible inclusion.
Shall I move that it be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes.
Okay. And I would move the A5. The A5 will get the bill in the form that I would like to talk about it, and it is also based on quite a bit more of stakeholder discussion since the initial bill, was dropped.
Okay, and I appreciate that. To the A5. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. So 2-4988 as amended, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. So last year, we passed really meaningful and responsible legislation about addressing transportation greenhouse gas emissions, our number one source of greenhouse gases in Minnesota. The backdrop to this policy is that we already have a statewide goal of getting to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050 in transportation. And to do so, MnDOT has a goal of reducing vehicle miles traveled per capita 20% by 2050. So the legislation took those and built on top of those. In addition to climate considerations for what we did last year, there are other significant benefits to Minnesotans of hitting these objectives. Rocky Mountain Institute did a study and found that if we can hit the vehicle miles traveled goal, it would save Minnesotans $91 billion through 2050. These direct health, safety, and vehicle operation cost benefits would be worth over $5 billion a year by the time we hit 2050, and include things like reduced car costs about $11,000 per year to operate, reduced costs from air pollution, and the fact that fewer people will die on our roads. Almost 400 people per year die on our roads today. The Climate Smart Transportation Policy we passed last year requires that after February of 2025, if there is a significant capacity expansion project on the MnDOT system that will increase greenhouse gas emissions or vehicle miles traveled, then that increase must be offset. In priority order, that offset can be within the project itself or from another project in the same community or within a historically disadvantaged community or somewhere else in the region or lastly, somewhere else in the state. The legislation that we passed created an impact mitigation working group to work through technical implementation considerations. The work group, the working group consisted of representatives from MnDOT, city and county officials, city engineers, county engineers, regional planning organizations from the metro and greater Minnesota, and key advocate organizations. They produced a report at the end of January. This bill is focused on recommendations from that report. I want to start, and by the way, that group I thought did a phenomenal job. They really leaned into it, and I appreciate the work they did. I want to start by quoting from that report because it will help as we work through the bill. Quote, the working group found that with existing tools and capabilities, basic aspects of the legislation can be implemented. The working group also determined that to fully realize the legislation's effectiveness, a comprehensive and integrated multimodal planning framework should be developed. Transportation investments that reduce emissions and vehicle miles traveled need to be coordinated between cities, counties, metropolitan planning organizations, and MnDOT. So specifically, based on the recommendations from the working group, this bill does the following. First, it provides a path and timeline to shift to more of a portfolio approach. So projects are evaluated with respect to the portfolio of projects being planned and less on an individual project basis. Second, it creates a technical advisory committee to help provide ongoing guidance to the technical implementation of the policy. Third, it allows the MnDOT commissioner to implement or change the list of allowable offset actions based on recommendations from the technical advisory committee. Fourth, it provides funding for the work needed both for MnDOT and regional planning organizations to enhance modeling tools to support this transition to a portfolio-based approach. And it provides funding for impact mitigation-related projects in 2025 and 26, and preferences this funding for use with projects that reduce traffic fatalities or severe injuries. So with that, there are some testifiers.
Okay. We'll get to the testimony and then committee questions. First up, I have Eric Rudin from MnDOT.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudin, MnDOT Government Affairs, and Representative Kraft actually made a lot of the points I was going to make, so I'll just be very brief. I would like to thank Representative Kraft for carrying this legislation, which does, by and large, reflect the recommendations of the work group. I'd also like to thank the members of the work group. I think you're going to hear from at least one of them later. We met basically every 2 weeks from last June until February. And so it was a very large time commitment from that group of people, and we had a lot of great discussions. But as was mentioned, we came up with several recommendations. I do want to point out some of the funding that is in the bill. I think there's still some discussion going on. We had the Senate hearing yesterday and discussion about what the proper source of that funding is. But I do want to also point out that metro area counties have the ability to use a portion of their transportation advancement account funds for any offsetting, so they can use up to 17% of those resources for offsetting or mitigation. That's in the bill. So there's a lot of work yet to do before these requirements go into effect next February. But I think with the group that we've had and the group that's established in this bill, we'll be able to work through some of these issues and come up with a system that by next year we can begin implementing, and then over the long term, by hopefully 2027, we can move from a project-by-project evaluation to more of a programmatic or portfolio evaluation. I think there was widespread agreement in the work group that we need to move in that direction. So we're very pleased with the efforts of the work group, and we think that this legislation, like I said, goes a long way to implementing the recommendations of the work group. So thank you again, and I'll stop there.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Rudin? All right, our next testifier is Darren Lee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Darren Lee with Flaherty and Hood, here today representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We are an advocacy organization representing over 100 cities outside of the metropolitan area. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on this bill, and I also want to thank you for meeting with me last week to hear our concerns with this legislation, Mr. Chair, and thank the author for meeting with us as well to discuss his bill and incorporating some of our suggestions into the author's amendment that you adopted. First, I want to say we agree with the goal of reducing greenhouse gases and acknowledge that in the metro area where expansion may occur for capacity reasons, it can induce demand. However, in greater Minnesota, the reason for highway expansion can be much different. It is not done there to increase capacity or vehicle miles traveled necessarily, but rather for safety and economic reasons. And going back to last session, when we looked at this original legislation that this bill that you have before you today would seek to modify, it really looked to us like it could be a major obstacle to highway projects in greater Minnesota. We advocate very strongly for corridors of commerce projects and other projects in greater Minnesota where safety is a concern, with a two-lane road where we see a pattern of severe accidents, and going from a two-lane to a four-lane is needed for safety reasons. Highway 14 is a great example of this. When we asked proponents whether a project like this would be able to move forward had this legislation been in place at the time, it's unclear. At a minimum, it would add cost, complexity, and time to a life-saving project like that. And so we'd like to see some stronger language in this bill on safety that would allow some off-ramps for a critical safety project, absent an exemption, some language to prioritize mitigation offsets for projects based on certain safety criteria should be added. The legislation last year created a working group, which Representative Kraft talked about, and Mr. Udine, to help implement the legislation and provide recommendations to the legislature. And we support the creation of an oversight or advisory committee in this bill to continue that very complicated work of that recently concluded working group to develop these impact assessment requirements, modeling tools, and travel demand forecasts. And we appreciate allowing that committee to develop additional mitigation options. It will be difficult and less feasible to do some of the mitigation specified in this legislation in greater Minnesota, which is why we also support additional mitigation or offset options being added to this bill. One of our concerns with the introduced version of HF 4988 is that by adding categories to a list of applicable projects, it expands the scope of the bill without achieving the intent of the working group's recommendation of looking at it at a more programmatic approach rather than looking at it on a project by project basis. We think the author's amendment makes positive changes to allow a little more flexibility for MnDOT to achieve the reduction targets. We also think adding multimodal in addition to highway projects would provide some additional flexibility to achieve those reduction targets. We want to make sure that when we're assessing greenhouse gases that we're looking at projects not only that increase greenhouse gases, but also making sure we're counting the good with the bad, the projects that are decreasing greenhouse gases so that the targets can be met. We'd like to see a city and county engineer on the oversight committee because those are the people that are really going to be doing the work. We like giving the commissioner the ability to identify capacity expansion project with the advice of the advisory committee. We think there could be some language added to better define what qualifies as a capacity expansion project. And finally, we strongly oppose using trunk highway funds for mitigation purposes, which are clearly not trunk highway purposes and not constitutional. So we are happy to see language referencing those mitigation or offset actions as trunk highway purposes taken out in the amendment. However, the appropriation section of the bill still takes $23.8 million from the Trunk Highway Fund for other purposes, which we don't think is appropriate, particularly the $20 million for mitigation under Section 161.178. We think there should be state funding provided for mitigation offsets that will be required, but we would like to see that come from a different source, and I think there are some creative ideas for how maybe to accomplish that, and we look forward to seeing that come forward. thank you, Chair Hornstein and author, for incorporating some of our suggestions and allowing us to share our views, and we look forward to improving the bill as it moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Are there questions, Mr. Lee? You can maybe call him up later, too, if necessary. Next on our list is Steve Bott. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and also thank you to Representative Kraft for the A5 amendment. My name is Steve Bott. I am the City Administrator and Public Works Director for the City of St. Michael, here today representing the League of Minnesota Cities and the City Engineers Association. We've been involved in this for a while. We're excited to be on the working group, had good representation there, and appreciate what came out of that. That's reflective a lot in this legislation. Along that line, the City Engineers Association and League of Minnesota Cities is excited that we do have a technical advisory committee formed in this legislation. We think there's some things to work out specifically as far as what projects would qualify under this portfolio, which we do definitely support the programmatic or portfolio system. However, would want to make sure things like mill and overlays, preservation projects, and other things like that that clearly aren't relative to the capacity expansion would maybe be further defined and not count. Along the lines of the previous testimony, we would like to see a city and county engineer on that technical advisory committee. That did pass as an amendment in the Senate yesterday. Do recognize that the current legislation with the amendment allows for two governmental representatives, and we appreciate that, but feel we bring a unique technical skill and expertise to that advisory committee that would be helpful. Further, as was mentioned earlier, I would like to see the funding for this come from a different source. There was an amendment in the Senate that allowed for that yesterday as well. There's just a lot of needs with the trunk highway funds, as you know, for our highway and bridge purposes. And then last, we're concerned about some of the reporting requirements on local governments. Some of our small cities that could be really onerous, depending on exactly what that is. So we're looking for further clarification on the reporting requirements for the local governments on their local multimodal systems and local projects that impact greenhouse gases and VMT. Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to testimony, and the author as well.
Thank you, Mr. Bott. Question? Okay. Next, we have Joe McPherson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe McPherson. I'm the Anoka County Engineer, and I have the honor today to represent the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota County Engineers Association. I'd like to start off with thanking Representative Kraft for his continual willingness to meet with us, talk about any issues we have, concerns, and recommendations for the bill. So again, we appreciate that. I'd also like to give a shout out to all the members that were on the working group committee. As you heard earlier from Representative Kraft and Mr. Rudin, there was a lot of work that was put into this. We had some very in-depth conversations, as you can imagine. At all times, we weren't always in agreement with what was being discussed, but I do respect and appreciate the conversations that we did have. And again, there's still a lot of work yet to be done on this. As noted earlier, some of the basic elements of this legislation can be implemented here, but there's still a lot of work to do. So we are supportive of seeing the technical advisory committee, and we'd like to see a city and county engineer included on that. With that, I'm not going to go through all of what the previous testifiers have gone through. I just want to focus on a couple elements of that. One is on line 2.13 of the A5 amendment. It describes related data reporting from local units of government on local multimodal transportation systems and local project impacts on greenhouse gas emissions and VMT. The Minnesota County Engineers Association, again, is just would like a little further clarification on what kind of reporting that is, maybe the background or need for that. And so look for a little further clarification on that. And again, just supporting that technical advisory committee. A lot of work is yet to be done. Developing the model for the state and those types of elements are very important. So with that, I close my testimony and open up for questions.
Questions? Okay. Is Peter Wiganius in the house? Or Sam Rockwell? Oh, there's Peter. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Peter Wiganius, Legislative Director at Sierra Club. We support this bill, a critical updating of a very important law, which moves in the right direction to apply GHG VMT reduction goals to more projects. I would also like to provide a caution about the amendment. Since this law is relatively new, I can understand why folks might be reluctant to provide MnDOT with maximum flexibility over the use of trunk highway dollars. But the alternative in the amendment to provide MnDOT minimal flexibility over using trunk highway dollars is not the answer. This shouldn't be an all or nothing proposition. MnDOT not being able to fund needed mitigations will needlessly increase the likelihood that some projects will need to be canceled outright. So a small step in the right direction would be to allow trunk highway dollars to be used just for the capital costs of highway BRT projects on MnDOT highways. This would clearly meet the test of highway purpose in the Constitution. Earlier in my career, I worked on the epic quest to reconstruct 35W, incorporating a bus rapid transit project from Minneapolis to Burnsville. How long did that take? Well, I recall Mayor Ryback and Governor Pawlenty discussing MnDOT's funding application with President Bush as they toured the wreckage of the 35W bridge in 2007. President Bush did approve that funding. But it shouldn't take nearly 20 years in a bridge collapse to build a BRT line. It did because of all the different funding streams that needed to be lined up. So how long will it take to build Highway 36, let alone BRT on 169? In case you think Met Council will cover it, think again. Met Council has a direct financial budgetary incentive to prioritize upgrading any existing service with arterial BRT over any highway BRT project which incurs new operating expenses. Despite last year's historic bill, Highway BRT remains an orphan mode in need of adoption by an agency. So now that we know components like Highway BRT stations will likely become necessary mitigations within MnDOT's portfolio of projects, why not give MnDOT some small flexibility now? Just for the sake of compliance with the law and for asset preservation, we are going to end up fixing this. Sooner is better to allow MnDOT to plan ahead. That caution provided, Sierra Club strongly supports this bill, and we are very much appreciative of Representative Kraft's ongoing work to keep making a great bill even better. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wiganius. Questions? Next up is Sam Rockwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sam Rockwell. I am Executive Director of Move Minnesota Action and was a member of the work group that's been referenced a few times here. I want to start off by thanking all of you for passing this legislation last year, and particular thanks to Representative Kraft for leading this nation-leading bill, to the members of the work group, and also to MnDOT, who's been a really important partner on figuring all of this stuff out, both last year as a member of the work group and just as a leader in this space. So, you know, why the update so soon, right? We passed this bill last year, now law. And, you know, this is because this is a nation-leading law. This is because this is our first in the nation with this form, with vehicle miles traveled included. And so that means we didn't know how to implement it. And so we created a work group in the legislation last year. That work group has come back with recommendations which form the basis for the bill before you today. I wanted to touch on a couple of parts of the A5 amendment here and I'll do my best not to repeat what others have said. So first, on the Technical Advisory Committee, I also think that the Technical Advisory Committee is an important body. As we think about that Technical Advisory Committee and its role, I encourage the members of the committee to think about it like a planning commission, right? An entity that is reviewing whether a particular assessment is in line with the requirements that we have for doing that assessment, right? The requirements in the law, the requirements of our greenhouse gas and VMT reduction targets. In order to provide that assessment well, the Technical Advisory Committee should be able to have some arm's length distance from, members should have arm's length distance from the decisions they're making. So it's really important that as we think about the makeup of that committee, that we're confident that that committee is making those decisions with the future of our climate and those goals in mind. I would also encourage the restriking, I guess, of the natural systems line item in the mitigation list. The Technical Advisory Committee has been given the authority to add mitigation items here. The natural systems mitigation item in the legislation is an outlier, and it is not in the transportation sector. If we're going to hit our greenhouse gas reduction targets, it's going to be important that we hit those targets in every single sector. The more focused we are on greenhouse gas reduction efforts, the more likely we are to actually hit those targets. And so staying laser focused sector by sector, subsector by subsector, in hitting those targets is going to be important. Finally, I will echo the support for including some flexibility in the use of those trunk highway funds. We have a list of prohibited uses in statute right now. Those prohibited uses are going to prevent some of those funds from being used for mitigation efforts, which in turn will likely prevent highway projects from moving forward. Thinking about that flexibility, not just as providing an ability to move towards a more multimodal system, but also being able to deliver on the highway projects that are on our list if we do not have enough funding to support mitigations for those projects is important. I think as we think about all of this, you know, what gets measured gets done. And so bringing more information, more data into MnDOT's ability to do these assessments, into other entities' ability to do these assessments is going to be important. Understanding how greenhouse gas emissions and VMT is not just playing out on our trunk highway system, but it's also playing out across our local roads, county roads, so that we understand that full landscape. That's going to let us hit our actual targets. With that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rockwell. Is there anyone else that would like to testify either in favor or in opposition to House file before us? Okay, questions from the committee? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author of the bill, the Department of Transportation prioritizes safety, and when they prioritize, it's immediate safety, which should remain the priority first. Not to include the idea that, yeah, vehicles, miles traveled, we reduce that, less cars on the road, theoretically, and possibly through research, less cars on the road equal more safety, but that's a long-term investment in safety. My concern right now, and I need assurances from you, looking through this bill, you see parts where it says safety and well-being, that it is must not supplant the safety and well-being established, but I can think of numerous hypothetical situations in which a district engineer is seeing a dangerous situation that needs to be funded, and in requiring the district engineer to conduct these safety protocol, this study on greenhouse gas emissions and mitigations, will the district engineer have to locate funds elsewhere in order to mitigate the safety and well-being of Minnesota drivers?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson. So we were really careful to make sure that when we passed the legislation last year, that it said that this does not supplant any of MnDOT's safety goals. You can certainly create lots of hypothetical situations, but the intent of this is that, I would say I do reject the premise that we cannot make safety, you know, paramount in the short term, as well as saving lives in the longer term by being more effective with vehicle miles traveled and requiring people, not requiring people to have to drive as much. So yes, safety is critical. We've tried to address some of that with some of the mitigation dollars to say that those should be, if there does have a situation like that pop up, that there's some dollars there, that those are prioritized towards those kinds of projects. But as I said, you know, we must be able to have safe roads and habitable environment.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. So a hypothetical that's not quite so hypothetical. We recently heard a bill here that discussed including and requiring rumble strips on all intersections outside of city limits with a speed limit above 55 miles per hour. Let's imagine, for example, that we have to get this done and there is no funds to get the project done and to mitigate the carbon emissions that will result as this project has been evolved. You know, you're bringing in equipment, you're emitting carbon into the atmosphere. How do we make sure that these rumble strips, which are designed to help people and increase safety of our drivers, how can we fund that while still abiding by the requirements that this bill is pushing for us?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Olson. Okay, well, that hypothetical, number one, I do not believe would be increasing greenhouse gas emissions or vehicle miles traveled. In fact, by slowing traffic, it's probably going to be reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And the other thing you talked about, there would be some carbon emissions from the creation of those rumble strips. Those are explicitly not included in this legislation. So that, I'm not an expert in specific projects, but just in my reaction to it is that wouldn't have an impact.
So you are in no way worried that the immediate safety of drivers on the highway will be impacted at all by this report, necessary study and mitigation process?
Representative Pratt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, no, I'm not.
Okay. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So talking about moving to a portfolio mindset rather than project by project, in what way is that categorized? For like the city of Blaine is, you know, working on Highway 65, and that will obviously increase vehicles mile traveled because right now they're really not traveling on Highway 65. Is it up to the city to come up with like a bus rapid transit or something or of another nature that they have to bundle together with this to offset? Or who comes up with what a portfolio is?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative West. So I'm going to address part of it, and then I might ask MnDOT to come up and help talk about some of the mechanics of this. But, of course, your first part of the question was, Highway 65. So, by the way, I haven't looked at it, but it is not a given that what's happening on Highway 65, number one, would increase greenhouse gas emissions because there are some multimodal aspects of what's happening there, nor is it a given that it would necessarily increase vehicle miles traveled because the legislation is about looking at the impact on the network. So in that kind of a situation, there would certainly be more traffic that would come onto the road, but it would be pulled from other areas in the network that should be factored in. So I'm not familiar with the specifics, but it's not, these analyses are not, require some nuance. And I might ask.
Mr. Dean, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative West. So first, important to note that Highway 65 will not be subject to these requirements because it will already be in the STIP by the time these requirements go into effect next February. So again, we're speaking a bit hypothetically, but if there was a project like that in the future, we as a department would be sort of overall responsible for making sure that the program or portfolio is in conformance with the GHG and VMT targets. If it was not, then we would have to do some mitigation on a project like that. So in a case like that where a city or county is kind of the lead, they would probably take the lead on identifying that mitigation and either modifying their project to include ways to reduce GHG or VMT, or the legislation, if you look at last year's legislation, it talks about interlinking. So it's kind of linking that particular expansion project with a way to offset the increase in GHG and VMT. So there's a process that's kind of described where you, again, link the increase over here with a decrease over here, so that overall it will reduce or at least not increase GHG and VMT.
Representative West.
And so the entity that is coming up with the projects then has to come up with another project. So does that mean in order to get, so phase two or section two of Highway 65 is funded, and thank goodness we'll not be subject to this, or else we'd need even more money. And then there's two more sections, sections one and section three. In order, say those do determine to increase vehicles mile traveled, which they almost certainly will. The multimodal aspects of the Highway 65 project are very nice, but most of them are for crossing over Highway 65, which is something that's a big problem. That would reduce a few cars traveling 2 miles, but the amount of people who will now be flying down Highway 65 at 65, 70 miles an hour instead of 35, which is probably a less efficient speed to drive, greenhouse gas-wise, but people vastly prefer it. So in order to get those other phases of that project, and they're determined to have a greater greenhouse gas emission, then would the county or the city for that mitigation project need both of those to be funded in order to proceed on Highway 65 to finish the project?
Mr. Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative West, yes, I think the legislation requires at least the identification and commitment of funding for that offsetting project. So, yeah, before a project can enter into the STIP, you have to also identify funding for the offsetting. So if your analysis shows that you're going to increase GHG or VMT, although, you know, there are some instances where you might think your project is going to increase GHG, but as you pointed out, you know, if it's a stop-and-go condition today and your project's going to result in more free-flowing traffic, you actually may not be having significant impacts on GHG emissions, because a car that's moving at, you know, 40 miles an hour versus stop-and-go is actually going to pollute less or emit less carbon emissions.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm assuming it's some sort of study. So is MnDOT the one who determines the, whether mitigation is necessary?
Mr. Chair, Representative West, I think the commissioner of MnDOT, sort of in consultation with this technical advisory committee that we're talking about, would ultimately be responsible for determining if mitigation is necessary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's understandable, but when you're looking at doing these other projects, and this is a huge issue with the bill, well, one, if you have to do two projects just to get one project done, that's going to be a huge barrier to cities. This bill has been so controversial. I've met with so many people who hate politics, want nothing to do with politics, and they're all engineers from like every three-name firm in the entire city and state has been coming to meeting with me on this particular bill. And they are incredibly concerned. And one thing, when you talk about MnDOT or this working group or a study coming up with these climate mitigations, well, these are all estimates. These are all guesses, for lack of a better word. And we've seen that projections from state government are not particularly accurate. I mean, right now, in Q4 of 2023, North Star Light Rail has 500 daily riders, which is pathetic and incredibly expensive and a ridiculous waste of money, but that was projected to have a lot more ridership. So if a light rail project was intended to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions, but only 500 people use it, that might not even actually save greenhouse gas emissions when you factor in the cost and maintenance and all that goes into building and maintaining that facility for a mere 500 people a day. Because those 500 people might not even necessarily be driving a car down. They could be carpooling to the Twins game or something like that. So it's not even taking 500 cars off the road. And that projection was way off. So when we're looking at you know, the future of Highway 65 and having to build two projects in order to expand this. And then it's based on these projections that we have to hope are right, but will add significant costs. And then it takes $14 million from the Trunk Highway Fund, which is already underfunded. So for anybody who is, wants to get a road built in their district, this is going to, as one of the testifiers said, add complexity, time, and cost. And we know the Trunk Highway Fund is having some headwinds. Gas tax is no longer going up. Less cars are using gas in general. And the Trunk Highway Fund continually is raided by other entities rather than being used for the construction and maintenance of trunk highways. When I look at the future of Highway 65, thank goodness this was done when we had an $18 billion surplus that we could get Section 2 done. But we have Section 1 and Section 3 down in Representative Cagle's district and up in my district, which we both will very much want to see done. Now, you could say maybe you'll be able to massage the numbers, but we don't know who's going to be massaging the numbers. But we do know this will add cost, time, and complexity to these projects. And I could not imagine that this, I could understand this being a data collection. Like, let's start collecting data on this and just see, you know, hey, what are we looking at for climate impacts? Maybe we can measure it after it's done and use that information to do a bill that doesn't make it harder in a time where it's already getting harder to build new highways. And I can tell you, if you talk to regular people, people who aren't part of some nonprofit, who aren't part from Proofy Club, regular people, they want to be able to drive their cars. And this theoretical future of saving $91 billion, I mean, I'm not even sure if you believe, maybe you do believe that, but I don't believe that. That's ridiculous. And then saving $91 billion by making everybody's life even more difficult when gas is, I just saw an article this morning, gas is going to be around $5 a gallon this summer, which it always goes up this summer. But it's, the roads are getting worse. We're making it harder to build new roads. Thank goodness we got Highway 65 under the wire. Now we have two more sections of Highway 65 that are going to be even harder to do, especially the stretch south in Representative Cagle's district, because that's going to be really expensive because there's County 10 moving through there, there's Highway 10 moving through there, and that's going to be very expensive. So I wish we could take a more practical approach and not completely make it more difficult to build new roads, because we need Highway 65 will be good for a little bit, but it's not going to be good forever. And we shouldn't make it harder based on some theoretical numbers to build roads. That's what people actually want in Blaine. So thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative West. Representative Kraft, did you want to respond?
I do, Mr. Chair. So, Representative West, there was, I appreciate your passion, but there was so much incorrect about what you just said. Guesses versus estimates, there are, of course, the future is not perfectly predictable, but there are tools to assess greenhouse gas emissions and vehicle miles traveled. You talked about 500 people as your, I mean, the number of people that ride BRT and light rail today is far higher than that. You're talking about a specific situation, okay? You also made comments about regular people versus frou-frou people in advocate organizations. That's, you know, that's a rather ridiculous comment. You also mentioned gas being $5 a gallon. Can I point out that if we're able to live our lives and drive a little bit less, the impact of gas prices being higher will be lower on people. So, and also say, you know, you made a suggestion of why isn't this a data collection? This is law. We passed this last year. What we're trying to do now is respond to a very good job by the working group to advance things forward. You know, we are, have you seen the winter we just had and the summer of last summer and the amount of air quality issues we've had in this state? We are past the point of let's data collect and study this stuff. We have to take action, and this is a responsible way to do so. We will be paying for these costs for a long time, and this is a responsible way to address this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. Representative Murphy is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. You know, there's Minnesotans are split on climate change. I mean, that or climate agenda. They just are. I mean, not everybody thinks like, you know, not all people don't think alike. So we have these, the working group, and we have the technical advisory committee. Who makes up those committees? What do they look like? How many members? Where do the members come from?
The well, I in my Mr. Chair, so in my testimony of the on the so this is from the working group.
Yeah.
The working group that just completed its work had the Commissioner of Transportation or a designee, the Chair of the Met Council or a designee, two representatives from the Department of Transportation Sustainable Transportation Advisory Council, two representatives from the Minnesota County Engineers Association, two representatives from the City Engineers Association, one representative from Metropolitan Planning Organization or Regional Development Organization in Greater Minnesota, and one representative from MOVE Minnesota. And in your amendment today is a list of who's proposed to be on the Technical Advisory Commission.
Mr. Chair.
President Murphy.
Are they all appointed, or how do they become members?
Well, it was in the folks here, and the folks on the, and the folks on the working group, it was described. So the Commissioner of Transportation or designee, so they get to designate one. The Chairman of the Metropolitan Council or designee. So the Minnesota, for example, in the County Engineers Organization, they got to select two people that would be on it. And the City Engineers Association, they got to select two people that would be on it.
Well, Mr. Chair, are there any opponents to climate change? Are there any members of legislature that were ever invited to be part? You know, a lot of the, you know, for instance, I'm a member of the Rare Disease Council. We have members on both sides that at least will help, because we know it's not a completely, the split on people that believe is different. So we, at least we want those thoughts to be passed on. And so I'm just wondering if there's any members that were either opponents of, or if there's any, if there's ever been looked at to have representatives or senators be part of that.
Representative Kraft.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, definitely not did we consider having legislators part of it. It was a technical group, and the representation, there were several organizations there that were not in favor of the initial legislation that were included in it. And as opposed to folks, whether they believed in climate change or not, that was irrelevant. And I will also point out, I don't believe in climate change myself. I accept the facts, what's happening, that it is, and the science behind it, that it is happening. But, you know, someone's view on climate change was irrelevant to whether they were part of that working group.
Mr. Chair, I just have a different question, if I could.
Also,
thank you. With regard to, you know, climate goals and costs, Minnesotans are concerned about not necessarily just this bill, but what it looks like moving forward on overall costs to accomplish our goals. Can you give Minnesotans idea of what it looks like in terms of carbon goals when we get there, and when will we get there?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, that is beyond the scope of this bill. I'm happy to talk about that with you, but that's beyond the scope of this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I think Minnesotans want to know for sure that it's real. So I think we really owe them an idea of what it looks like when we get there. All these things are measurements of little pieces of it, but the big goal of what it looks like when we get there, nobody knows that. Nobody knows what they want the carbon to look like, only that we want to do our part here. But Minnesotans want to know more than that. We want to know, if we're going to spend all this money to accomplish these goals, what are they? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, so the goals that we have as a state adopted in statute are carbon-free grid by 2040 and net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. And in both of those, there are steps along the way to get there. Those are the goals. And I think in terms of what I can tell you, you know, what it looks like if we don't and others don't achieve those goals is more of what we've seen this past winter and last summer.
Representative Murphy, one more, and then we'll move to Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So currently we're at about 416 parts per million of carbon in the air. What do you think it'll look like in 10 years, you know, as we move forward to our plan?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, the carbon parts per million is irrelevant to this bill. We're talking about implementing recommendations from a work group on a piece of legislation that we passed last year.
Just one follow-up.
Last one.
Thank you. The answer is we just have no idea what that lumber looks like. And if we reduce carbon in the air, what does it actually mean? I come from agriculture. We don't want to move to really low levels of carbon. We won't have photosynthesis. They go together. Make sure we know the whole thing, because just have these little pieces come out, they don't paint the whole picture. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comment?
I'm Chair Hornstein, Representative Murphy. Let me just say, I wish you were right. For my kids, for everyone's kids, I wish you were right. Unfortunately, the science is very clear, and you're just not.
Thank you, Representative Kraft and Representative Murphy. Representative Elkins and Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as I'm listening to this discussion, and these are topics that I've been studying for a long time as well, I think we're setting up a kind of a false dichotomy that there are trade-offs between reducing greenhouse gases and either safety or traffic flow. And it's just not true. So let's go back to Representative West's example of Highway 65. A Highway 65, which is engineered to promote free-flowing traffic at 55 miles per hour, would be safer, generate less greenhouse gases, and less expenses than either the current stop-and-go traffic on Highway 65 today, or a Highway 65 engineered for travel at 75 miles per hour. 55 miles per hour, according to MnDOT data, is the speed at which traffic flow is optimized. You know, free-flowing traffic is always going to generate less greenhouse gases than congested stop-and-go traffic. And trying to engineer any road for free-flowing traffic at excessive speeds is always going to reduce safety and increase greenhouse gas emissions as well as compared to an appropriately designed road. If this legislation encourages city and county engineers to replace signalized intersections with roundabouts, for example, that also is going to dramatically improve both safety and reduce greenhouse gases significantly. So the notion that this is going to compromise either convenience or safety, it's just not true.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Any thoughts, Representative Kraft?
Agree.
Okay, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to turn our attention to the next priority I think that the state has, first being safety. Second, let's talk about funding here. We've got a testifier who stated that this bill reduces the flexibility of the Department of Transportation to construct highways and mitigate carbon emissions. I would say that our Constitution actually provides zero flexibility with regard to the utilization of trunk highway funds for the purpose of mitigating carbon. Can you please explain to me how, I know that the amendment reduced some of the scope of what you're attempting to do here, but we're allocating $20 million over the next couple years for impact mitigation. And then you go to the list over here and you see that impact mitigation refers to things like vanpool and shared vehicle programs, like maybe Uber and Lyft would be a vehicle program, remote work, broadband access, which we spend considerable sums of money already outside of the purview of trunk highway funds. But also we're looking at things like creating apartments. Now it says residential and other density increases. So we could build an apartment building. Would the Department of Transportation would they be the owners of it? Would they collect rent on this and then they could utilize that, the excess funds from the apartment to further pay for the trunk highway funds? Where is within the constitutional purview of the trunk highway funds as accepted by the voters of the state of Minnesota, how does this go into that? Because this is a major concern of mine. According to the interpretation of this constitutional amendment, based off of how it has always been identified, trunk highway funds are not to be used to build apartments.
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, so thanks for the question. So I will say just the thing, the amount in the amendment is $13.8 million. There have been people thrown out other numbers. Your point still is valid, but that's what's in the amendment. The And part of what I was doing is responding to a request from the work group that on funding flexibility addressed the potential eligibility of trunk highway funding to be used for mitigation interlinking eligible projects that are not on the trunk highway system. So the initial amendment had a bit more expansive list, exploring those options, and then based on feedback, cut that down substantially. The money that is in there would that MnDOT could use would be subject to the existing constraints they have on use of trunk highway funds. But we're not changing the definition of what can be used or not used.
Representative Wilson?
Maybe fiscal staff can provide us a little bit of clarification on this. What I'm looking at is I'm seeing that the amendment says $10 million in fiscal year 2025 is appropriated from the Trunk Highway Fund, and then later on it says the appropriations $5 million in each of fiscal years 2026 and 2027, and then $0 after that. Is that saying that in fiscal year 2025 we're appropriating that, and then we're splitting it the next years after that?
So, Mr. Chair and members, just a discussion of kind of what the tails will look like. This bill doesn't actually appropriate tails dollars into the tails. It just merely sets a base in which the future legislature could come back and change. So there's no actual spending occurring beyond FY 24 and 25.
Thank you. Thank you for that definition. So what we're saying is that the expectation is that in years 2026 and 2027, we will be spending an additional $5 million per year. Based off of the language in this bill?
Chair and members, if the legislature decided to have that particular clause go forward with no changes, yes, that would be the effect of any sort of tails designation.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author of the bill, so the discussion here is that we're talking about $13.8 million being allocated from the Trunk Highway Fund with the expectation that the next couple of years we'll be spending an additional $10 million for mitigation of carbon. What happens in the next years after that? Are we saying we're no longer, it goes to zero, so we're no longer going to be funding this carbon emissions mitigation through the Trunk Highway Funds? We're going to be casting that upon local entities, counties. How does this, in your mind, with no extra appropriations from the legislature, how does this continue in perpetuity, having these studies, having these requirements, having this mitigation practice with no excess funds coming from the Trunk Highway Fund?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, so this not being a budget year was intended just to start the discussion and have funding for the next couple of years, and fully recognizing that there is a broader discussion to be had about trunk highway funds and other mitigation dollars in the future.
And last question, we'll have to wrap up.
It's not so much a question, Mr. Chair. Just I think we will soon find that the Constitution provides not minimal flexibility, but it provides no flexibility when it comes to issues like this. It's there for a reason. It was voted on by the people of the state of Minnesota. This definitely, and these mitigations absolutely fall outside of the purview of what the Trunk Highway Fund is designated for with the maintenance of our highway system. After the safety issues, which you have done a fairly good job of quelling in my mind, the funding into the future utilizing something that it is not designated for is a serious concern of mine. I think it takes us in the wrong direction, and I think future transportation committees will lament the decisions that were made here if we choose to include this funding.
Thank you. Closing comments, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the vigorous discussion. One thing I want to close in pointing out, there's a lot, and I've heard concerns about, well, Highway 65 wouldn't have been able to get done. Highway 14 wouldn't have been able to get done. We need to think differently about transportation. And it's kind of, looking backward like that is almost nonsensical. I mean, an analogy I'd ask you to think about is the Twins won the World Series in 1991. It'd be almost like saying, you know what, we shouldn't do a pitch clock because the Twins wouldn't have won the World Series in 1991. We're creating a different framework right, that folks will need to think about going forward and a different way of analyzing and looking at our transportation infrastructure. So it absolutely is change. I really appreciate the work of the working group to help navigate us through that change. I think the discussion on use of funds and trunk highway funds is a good one and is one where I understand the concerns and we need to work through that. But I ask for your support for this key piece of legislation that will keep us moving forward on what we need to do and we will pay for one way or the other. So thank you very much.
Okay, members, House File 4988 as amended is laid over. And Representative Kraft, I know that you mentioned that this is still, you still have some flexibility in adding amendments and adding comments. That's why we have hearings. And so I think that there'll be some, my understanding is some additional changes coming forward.
Well, I'm happy to have discussions about some of the things that the Senate took up and the trunk highway discussion. So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And with that, then, House File 4988 as amended is laid over. So, members, we will have we will not meet for another week. And then we wanted to leave enough time for discussion of this bill today. And so a couple of the bills that were moved will hear next week. And we'll meet during the day and the evening on April 16th. And so that is the plan moving forward. And with that, we are adjourned.